such an important part of his victory, and that was very striking. First, because of the Islamophobic campaign that really was ran against him in the final weeks of the campaign. Also, because, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, there was the first Muslim woman to win a statewide office anywhere in the country. That really stands as a companion result given that context. But also because we saw the topic of immigration and ICE, and obviously Trump's agenda around those issues, be very important around the country. Just as one example, the Republican nominee for governor. Okay, well, there were a lot of races where immigration was on the ballot and a big issue, and that's what I was going to end with.
Daniel Nishanian, you got a lot in there. Editor-in-chief of Bolts. We'll link to your coverage of the elections at democracynow.org. I'll be in St. Louis Friday night. Check our website, democracynow.org.
RCT Pittsburgh. Welcome to our little experiment in freeform radio.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Already, so moved on, it's scary. I'm not where you left me. 88.7 FM WRHU in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert in New York, and we have Kusi Veto in South Africa, and we have Cody Millar in Pittsburgh. We're just going to say hello to both of you. Hello, hello.
Hello, afternoon.
Afternoon. But it's funny because we tape it. Good day, because it airs at different times too, so we have to go by that as well. How is everybody? Kusi, tell everybody where you are just to make them all jealous.
I'm at the local park. It's in Salt River. Obviously, this is not even my kind of vibe, because not that it's not my kind of vibe, it's just that it's not what I would see in my community, because since I work at Bush Radio, so it's close to Salt River, and it's a park, also a soccer field, where you can see the whole of Atlantic Ocean, including the harbor, Cape Town Harbor, and Blouberg, and you can also see, Robben Island. So that's where I'm at. I'm sitting here and, doing this. It's amazing, though. That, you know, when you, because when you're sitting here, you start to kind of like reflect into how the scars of apartheid have done a lot, you know, in terms of moving people far away from these beautiful scenarios, the beautiful landscapes of Cape Town. But yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, that's why you can hear wind also, is because I'm here. I just wanted to do this this one today, yeah, so I can also describe what I see.
And that's the beauty of radio. It's theater of the mind. You're giving everybody a nice picture in their head of where you are. That's the beauty of it.
I love that. And I'm so jealous of you, Kusi.
Can I also flex? Because I can also see Tower Mountain. I can see Lions, Devil's Peak. So, yeah, it's a nice view.
Juanita, how about yourself? Where are you broadcasting from today?
I'm not as lucky as Kusi. I'm sitting at my desk where I work from remotely every single day. So
boring.
I'm sitting. Yeah, I know, Kusi, but not all of us can be you, huh?
That is true. There's only one Kusi, and there's only one Juanita Williams. And we are thrilled that she is our guest today on One World Radio. And we thank you very much for coming on.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
So you've been involved in the world of journalism, local and community journalism in South Africa for a very long time. If you could give the listeners just kind of a brief synopsis, summary of the work that you've been doing, and we could touch on more topics later in the broadcast. But just to start, give us a synopsis.
Sure. Okay. So I've been working in media for a couple of decades now. Been with Bush Radio from after the illegal broadcast. So wasn't lucky enough to be involved in that excitement. Joined after I studied journalism for a bit at a Peninsula Technikon, which is now called the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. And joined there because I was unemployed after doing my in-service training, which was a sort of, you know, an internship that we do before you go back and finish your last year of university. Someone suggested that I join Bush Radio to learn radio because it wasn't really done that well at university at that time. And community radio was a completely new concept. It was not something that I was familiar with. It was not something that South Africans were familiar with at the time. I joined Bush Radio, and then from there on kind of opened my world. Really, to be where I am now, which is still involved with Bush Radio on several different levels, also prepared me to go into the world of journalism and into where I am now, which is managing editor of allafrica.com and so many other different things that I've done. But I credit Bush Radio and my discovery of community radio as, so, you know, the thing that catapulted me into being where I am and developed me into being the journalist that I am today.
something interesting about your career, Juanita, is that you started working in local journalism prior to the 1994 elections in South Africa. How would you say journalism had shifted from before 1994 and after 1994?
Sure. That's a big, so before 1994, like I said, when I joined Bush Radio, radio was not something, community radio was something new. But also radio was not something, and me being involved in the media as a media worker wasn't something that was a choice for a lot of people who were from disadvantaged backgrounds. And in South Africa, we refer to people as black, colored, Indian, you know, all the different races that were classified under apartheid. So it wasn't something that we were familiar with or that we even thought was a possibility for us to do. So just the mere fact that you could be involved in a radio station was also something that was just crazy. It was just like, yeah, you used to people being able to write stories, because I was like, you know, more like sort of mainstream, you can write stories. There were journalists that did that. There were journalists or radio presenters who went on air, but it wasn't really the norm, I would say. What it's like, what was it like after 94? I feel like it was, I mean, the first word that comes to mind is kind of chaotic, because there was the scramble for resources, the scramble for making a name for yourself, this scramble because there was suddenly so many different people doing so many different things in terms of journalism that it just, you know, the opening up of the airwaves. So community radio was another thing, like it opened up the airwaves for other people to have community radio stations as well. It was just like an explosion of people coming into the industry and making changes. You know, it was a creative time. It was very exciting. It was also that people were able to say what they wanted to say freely. It wasn't like a hidden sort of, you know, there wasn't a hidden agenda. It was people were saying, this is what I think the government should do. So it was a lot of, it was very open in terms of that. I mean, it's before 94 and after 94, if you look at it closely, we're just worlds apart. But I do want to say, which might be a bit of a downer, I'm sorry, that after all of that opening up and after all of that excitement, there was an evening out to a certain extent. The resources came into play once again. And by that I mean, you know, just financially. So that to a certain extent, South Africa is back where it was, where there are people who have and don't have. Not that we've ever gone away from it. And we're getting deep very quickly. not that it was different. It's just that we had this optimism, and you know, and I'm sure you've heard about the Rainbow Nation and the fact that everybody was together and they were working, and that's exactly, I could say that Bush Radio was a microcosm of that. But after 30 years of being involved with Bush Radio, I feel like it's like I'm now working with the Children's Radio Education Workshop and led a team of children into going on air, and I'm seeing very similar issues. I will name them because, well, you guys aren't interrupting me or anything. I will name them. Like, for instance, I have an issue with the children that I have put on ears that they only want to speak in English. And that's something that we haven't shaken off, even after 30 years, is that it's considered to be the lead language. It's, you know, we have more than... we have 11 official languages, 12 if you count sign language. And so for me, it's very uncomfortable to come back into a situation where children are still reluctant to speak their mother tongues and what they've learnt or not learnt at home. They prefer to speak English because that is the language that's considered to be and I'm putting it in air quotes, better than all the other languages. And yeah, I remember when I was growing up, I was also put in an English class. The other wasn't in Afrikaans class because that's the first language that my family spoke. But I was put in an English class because it was considered better to be in an English class. I would go further in life if I spoke English rather than Afrikaans. So it's really disturbing to know that that same situation is being perpetuated even now, and that our school system hasn't changed much in terms of encouraging children to speak in their mother tongues and to be taught in their mother tongues. It's a very complicated issue, obviously. Yeah, I went off a little bit, but you know.
Okay, so now in terms of you being someone who's been in the industry for many years and also, you know, be the person who would tell stories on how stories are being told in the world, how do you feel South Africa is moving forward into now? We know we've seen it with COVID-19, where a lot of things were being censored, a lot of things were being modified, a lot of things were being checked. How do you see now South Africa in terms of how they're reporting the facts? You know, we know that when it comes to facts, it was a stress thing when it comes to COVID-19. But how do you see South African journalism in terms of doing a thorough investigations into, you know, what is true, what is not?
So I think, well, South Africa is the same as any country now, battling with misinformation and disinformation, battling with people who are trying to push their own agendas, whatever reasons, usually to make money. So I think that capitalism is a huge issue. It can be a good thing, but unfortunately it's gotten to the point where it is make money above anything else. So whatever information is being pushed around the world, it has become like globalization is an issue. How I see journalism in South Africa right now is journalists and editors are scrambling to keep the publications and the radio stations and the television stations live, and in some cases doing it by any means that they can. Unfortunately, that means that some media owners are pushing lines that actually will advance them in terms of what the world is doing right now, which is, it's actually like it's a really difficult, it's slightly difficult for me to articulate. I feel like telling the truth is not something that gets you very far nowadays. And then, of course, the truth comes with all kinds of caveats. Like, is it your truth? Which truth is it? Is it truth related to, like, what you are saying or what you are doing? It's just all so complicated. And it always has been to be in the media, because we are trying to tell stories, and it's possible to twist those stories if that is your agenda or our agenda, if I can say that. So I think we are in a time when there's so much competition for people's ears that some media workers have fallen into behaving in a way that gets them the attention rather than them telling the story. Like, most recently, I was at a meeting with, it was women sitting together talking about AI, artificial intelligence. And I related it to the children from the Cape Town case, which is the name of the show of the crew children that I coordinate, facilitate these sessions. And I realized that they were using, and I know that they've been using AI, you know, it's just part of life now. But then I realized that also part of the reason they were using AI was because I was expecting them to be producing and putting out as quickly and as cleanly as possible their scripting, and, you know, pushing that agenda on them, saying, okay, you guys have to put out a radio show. So there's the expectation that they be productive members of society when these are like children between 11 and 14. They don't have to be productive anything. They have to tell their stories. And I think that that's, if I can do a blanket statement on the media, there are very few organizations that are still doing that, that are still saying, this is the story that needs to be told, and we are going to tell that story, and giving people an option to tell their stories themselves, not being some kind of conduit where you kind of go, okay, well, it has to be filtered through this, it has to sound this way, it has to be exactly 2 minutes long. It just needs to be told. And there are so many stories that are not being told because there's a lot of gatekeeping in terms of not just, you know, having access to the airwaves, but also having access to resources. So it's really from the simplest thing down to the sort of philosophical questions. Kusi, I'm sure that over answered your question. Yeah.
Juanita, recently you've been publishing a lot of articles on long COVID and the minimal international research focusing on the African continent. For data that does exist, it's aggregations of many smaller studies. What are your conversations around this issue and how are you choosing to cover it?
So the long COVID, the articles that I've done were inspired by the fact that my mother had COVID and then 2 years later died. And that was because I believe that she had long COVID, and there's just no medical coverage for long COVID in South Africa. There wasn't at the time, and I certainly didn't have access to those resources. I like to believe there are people. The articles that you mentioned focus on Malaria Consortium and the research that they have done in terms of long COVID. And it really comes down to people like Dr. Achan from Malaria Consortium, who saw that there was something going on with these symptoms that were so similar to malaria, but people didn't test positive for malaria. So she decided that she was going to do like a study. She said, okay, let's do a study on this. And I think that a lot of what happens in terms of what gets done is not big corporations or big companies. It's individual action from a person, and a person that believes in a particular. You know, it depends on what you believe in. So with long COVID, it was like, okay, there's something going on here. I'm not entirely sure what it is. I have these resources available to me, and I'm going to use that to find out what's going on. And in that way, finding out that Ethiopia and Uganda actually have a huge long COVID burden. And the continent has a huge long COVID burden. And finding that out is so important for organizations like our CDC, Africa CDC, who are planning for future pandemics, but also need to plan for when these people are going to need medical care, because the symptoms of long COVID are, there's so many varied. What people like I'm going back to productivity now, what people like to focus on is the fact that fatigue is one of those symptoms. And you can't have a workforce. And I mean, I don't necessarily agree with the work ethic here or pushing people into productivity, but you can't have a workforce that is fatigued. So what does that mean for the economy? So it's going to have so many knock-on effects that people, because we have a really young population on the continent, unfortunately, well, or fortunately, that means that a lot of people were diagnosed and not diagnosed with COVID because they had no symptoms of it. But they have long COVID now. So there's that disconnect, and treating it like it's a real disease, I think that's my individual action. I want to see people understanding that it is a real disease that does need to be treated in whatever way we possibly can. We have incredible scientists, Massimo Nunez and Professor Risha Pretorius, who have been working on long COVID and trying to diagnose it. And you know, trying to come up with ways where we could actually, where we could treat long COVID. So it is, it's something I'm very passionate about because it touched me. And I mean, like the COVID-19 pandemic, no one was left untouched by it. I do believe now, though, that a lot of people are going, well, it's over now. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Fortunately, we now have to deal with long COVID symptoms, and people need to understand that the more often you get COVID, whatever form it comes in now, because I'm not sure that the flu that's going around right now is not COVID, because people just aren't getting tested. It doesn't make sense to get tested. But I feel like we need to be vigilant when it comes to illnesses that go on for longer than a few months. Yeah.
So we've seen that, we, you know, with COVID-19 changing a lot of industries on how they do things or how they operate. For you as a journalist, how did you see journalism in South Africa or in your space? How has things changed for you? You know, is there a new way now of journalism, or everybody now can be a journalist? We know that with influencers, with people that being followed, we've seen it with live streaming is becoming a big thing in the world where news are being broadcast at the current time. So how has that changed for the whole world, especially for you in where you work?
So when people say things like everybody can be a journalist, my eye starts twitching, Kusi, because I'm just like, actually, everybody can report on an event happening. Everybody can tell you what happened at that place. Not everyone is going to give you all of the facts that you need in a way that you'll be able to digest it. And that's why we trained to be journalists. Now, I'm not saying that everyone can't be a journalist. Of course, we have the capacity to do so. But I do feel like when you do share information, it needs to be shared in a way that actually is possible for you to digest it and to use it. So when you speak about influencers, I think that, yeah, they definitely have their place in the world. I follow quite a few of them. I think it's really, and I think there are influencers who do really important work when it comes to sharing information and even sharing their opinion on what's happening in the world. Because, I mean, an influencer is how it's named, right? Like, that person influences you to do things in a certain way, or to buy certain things, or to, you know, speak in a certain way or whatever. But I think that influencers do have that role to play. The responsibility that they have, though, to the people, to the audience that they have, does not come with the same responsibilities as I was told I have when I started my journalism journey. I feel like journalists, really, we really do take the stuff seriously. We really do take the information that we share seriously. And there's a difference between a journalist blogger or a journalist and an influencer. And I'm not saying you can't be all of those things. I'm just saying that it's really important to look at how information is shared and what is being shared, because like I said earlier, you know, these people have agendas. And so you need to be able to differentiate between what the person is saying and what they mean when they're saying that. And unfortunately, the major thing is not that media is changing or that journalists are on one side and influencers are on the other. It's that people need to understand what they're consuming. And being cognizant of how to consume media and what goes into that media, because even if it's a journalist that is trained in journalism, they still could have an agenda. Like you see the big, I think the US media is an example, but we have examples here as well. There are newspapers, there are radio stations who have agendas. And when we consume our media, it's really, really important that we are educated and that we know that we, that there might be an agenda. Like, you know, we need to critically understand why certain media is putting out certain messages. And I think that, once again, coming back to Crew, it's really, really important that our children know that and that they learn to critically consume whatever it is they're consuming, whether they, and to critically use artificial intelligence, to critically listen to a song that they're playing and not just swallow it all or inhale it all, so that, like, you know, there's no thinking behind what they are consuming. I'm not sure if that, that answers your question in terms of, like, yeah, I hope it does.
And Juanita, Just as a reminder, the audience, they are currently tuned into the One World Community Radio Show, and we thank them very much for doing that. But what you were saying about media literacy with the Crew, you lead the Children's Radio Educational Workshop at Bush Radio, and you were talking about media literacy. What kind of, in all your years of journalism, we were talking about how the media world has shifted. What are you trying to instill in these kids as they try to prepare for potentially future careers in media of their own, being media literate? How to be a broadcaster, how to be a journalist, misinformation, everything we've kind of talked about. How are you kind of putting that into perspective with the kids when you're doing Crew?
So I am one of the facilitators. There are three facilitators. Kusi is one of them, and Renato is the other, and we jointly lead the Crew team. I think when you speak with a group of children, so obviously it's different for Kusi because he deals with older children. I've got the ones that are in the middle, and trying to wrangle them feels a little bit like herding cats sometimes because their energy levels are off the charts. So when it comes to media literacy and to serious topics, I need to find a way in. And whether it's discussing why 6-7 is so important right now is one of those ways, as an example. You know, like, why? Where did this come from? Why are you saying it? And then you have to kind of go, like, we're much older than they are. And so you have to understand that back when we were younger, we had the same kind of nonsense, sort of fun things that we did. Right? So media literacy doesn't necessarily have to be about, so what do you know about the Middle East and conflict? What do you know about Palestine? What do you know about what's happening in Sudan? It's not necessarily those things, although of course it is. It's about relationships and building those relationships and being able to spend time. And it's, so it's just once a week that we do Crew, and they go on air for 1 hour. But it's about building that relationship so that they, so that there's trust and the communication lines are open and we are able to say, like, okay, you know, why do you think this is important? So when it comes to media literacy, I feel like if we push too hard on those serious buttons, on those buttons where we're like, okay, this is how it should be done kind of thing, there is the possibility that we'll lose younger children, because not everyone that's involved in Crew is going to be a media worker of any sort. But like you said, what we want to raise in this case is young people and adults who are literate, who know how the media works. And that's for me the main job. Like, it's not necessarily to go on air and sound cool, although they love that, and I'm sure all their friends do too. It is about learning how media works and how it influences you, because yeah, it is a great influence on everyone's life.
Something else you could discuss, and we haven't really talked about this yet, we did with kind of articles that you cover, but you're the managing editor of All Africa Global Media, and we've spoken about misinformation and different things and the stories that you choose to cover. As the managing editor, how do you set the tone of what you want your publication to be in regards to the stories and the informations and unbiased reporting? How do you kind of set a tone as the boss for a media organization?
So it's really important when setting the agenda for a publication that you know what it is you want to, that you know what information it is you want to share with people. So I'll give you two examples. So we know that the war in Sudan has been going on for a long time, and that the attention has not been on Sudan, and you know that there are hashtags like keep eyes on Sudan. And what has been particularly frustrating for me in working on stories about Sudan is the fact that over and over again, it's the same kind of content, right? And that people to a certain extent have now, they're no longer reading it. There are so many studies about how many people are reading, are trying to avoid news avoidance, you know, trying to avoid certain kinds of stories. But what I've realized is, even though it's frustrating because it's our responsibility to make sure that everybody knows what's happening in Sudan, we can't go, oh, well, we're not touching that story anymore because, well, it's not really working for us in terms of leadership, and like we're not getting the kind of engagement that we want from that story, and we're just going to leave it. Like, we literally cover every single thing that happens in Sudan because it's our responsibility to do so. The other side of that coin is, so we can't, it's so hard though. You can't get away from the death and destruction and the general bad news that is happening on the continent at the moment. Like, for instance, right now, several countries that have finished their elections or are voting for their president and for their parliamentary members, and not a single one of them has gone smoothly. And it's either because the incumbent president has somehow made sure that the laws mean that he can stay in power, or that the opposition gets arrested, or that there are so many protests that young people are, you know, taking action. It's just, when I look at the news cycle right now, it can be quite depressing. And so the other thing that All Africa focuses on is, and I'm loath to say it, but it's good news stories. It's stories where people are actually making a difference. You know, it's people who are actually, like I said before, in the individual capacity, as part of organizations maybe, are taking action and actually making a difference in everyone's lives. So it's really important when I look at All Africa and our contribution to what is happening on the continent, that it's not all just what the death and destruction that is happening. And it's really important that we talk about the positive roles that people are playing in changing the continent, also into growing the continent into a place that we want it to be. So yeah, that's really important for my work on All Africa. And it's what I do with everything I work on. I want to make a difference. And I think that's important for the work that I do with All Africa. It's important for the work that I do with Bush Radio. It's important for any of the other roles that I play. I want to be part of a change that is actually positive for people, who, whether it's in the smallest part by listening to one of the children talk about when they were bullied at school during crew, or whether it's interviewing someone who's telling me she survived genital mutilation and now she's working to stop it in her country. It's really important to know that kind of information is going to touch someone and it'll bring about some kind of change, whether it's internal change or whether it means that governments or policymakers will actually look at those stories and listen to those people because they are being published. Because in to a certain extent, when we tell stories, it highlights issues, and then people sit up and take notice. And that's actually, that's being the original influencer, which is why I don't think it's a bad term. I know that they've been, I think people have been trying to say they're content creators, but I think being an influencer is something that should be aspired to, because you want to influence other people to do what you think is right.
Well, that was very profound and sweet. That was super nice to say. But that was great. But Juanita, something else is just, we're saying about like telling stories, and I've seen stuff of your work that you like telling stories. You are talking about making a difference. And you've also discussed telling stories about marginalized voices, stories that don't like get into the limelight. Have you seen more of those stories being told? And why are they so important for you to tell as a journalist, as an influencer who can influence public opinion on these people and their voices?
Yeah, I think as part of the reason I think that there's enough space for everyone, I just advocate for responsible storytelling. I would not like if people did it in an irresponsible way. And by that I mean that I have an agenda. I want everyone to have human rights. I want people to advance in their lives. I want people to be able to live freely. I want children to be able to go to school without having to worry that the gangsters are fighting in the area, which is something that happens on the Cape Flats, which is Bush Radio's sort of broadcast area. So I think I'm going to need a reminder of the question now, because I just lost my own train of thought there.
It was about the marginalized voices and why it's so important for you to tell. And do you think we're seeing more of those stories represented in media?
Yes. Yeah, so I think that's why I'm loving the fact that there's that media isn't specifically being kept to journalists and to people who have the money and the resources to, you know, go on. You need a phone. And yeah, there's problems with the different social media channels that we have. You know, they have their own agendas, but you literally can go on your phone and you can record your story and people will see your story and they'll be able to like identify with you, because it's so important that we have equal access to the media, and social media is literally what has done that. That people are able to access that and to share their stories at the same time. I think it's really, that's really what makes me excited about the way the media has changed. So on the one hand, I'm like, yay, you know, people get to do what they want to do. They get to go on their podcast and say what they want to say. And on the other hand, I'm just like, can we do it responsibly, please? So, yeah, so marginalized voices, the fact that there are people that can actually, that, like I said, they can go on air and talk about their stories and, you know, say what their lives are like. I think that's really important. And also it's really important for the person who's doing it as well, because it makes them feel like they're part of the world and that there are people that are listening to them and understanding them. And I think it's a very basic part of sort of human nature that we want to be understood and we want to be listened to. So I think the access that we have now to these different ways of like talking to the whole world, that's for me the positive part of it. There are, of course, not so positive parts of it where unfortunately, when messaging comes from other parts of the world, people take that on and it doesn't necessarily reflect your culture or is not positive for your community. That can be quite destructive.
Okay, so now as we're moving in the so-called new world, how do you see somebody who's working obviously with African stories being updated in what's happening in the continent? How do you see the continent? Are we ready on the new world of journalism, the new world of information? Is the whole continent being ready on that, being ushered in? As you know, that with different institutions, universities all over the continent, do we know how now, you know, to give information to communities? I know that Bush Radio has been emphasizing more on that in terms of communities need to have their opinion, need to, you know, be engaged in terms of what's happening in the continent. Do you feel that now that we as the continent, are we ready for that?
It's a big one, Kusi. I feel like I would not say that we are ready because there are so many factors and so many different countries on the continent, which means that there's so many different takes on what is happening in the world. Like some countries are completely in support of the presidents who want to rule them until they are, well, basically like a royal family, so for life. I mean, our presidents are the oldest in the world, some of the oldest in the world. I know that the US president right now is quite old as well, and so unfortunately that's a trend that Africa has been in the forefront of. In terms of journalism, I think that we are not necessarily following our own agenda, but that's something that has been happening with a lot of, it's in a lot of industries, you know, like, I go back to the AI conversation that I had last week, was that the 3%, I think it's 3% of the creating AI, the creation of AI is from the continent, right? That means 97% is coming from other parts of the world, but it's being pushed on us. Also that the resources for making those pieces of equipment that run AI programs, it all comes from the continent. So it always feels a little bit like we're caught on the back foot because it starts here, but we're not in control of it. And that's, I think I could probably say that about the media agenda as well. Like, we are storytellers. We know how to tell a story. I can tell you that, and I can say that without any doubt. African people are some of the best storytellers in the world. But that all has been kind of masked by, you need this equipment, you need to tell it in this way, you need to tell it in this language, you need to include this person, you need to include that person. It's all of the compromises that we've made over hundreds of years where we just, you know, were we trying to, in a situation where we have never been in control? And that's the part that really, I mean, I want to say it angers me, because we have all of these resources, and by resources, I mean like our brains, our creativity, our feelings, how important we know it is to tell a story to a child. We know how important those things are. But it's all just being like, it's in a bit of a haze. You know, the technology gets thrown at you, and then you get told you have to do it in a certain way. And then you're just like, let's outsource this. Let's just have someone else do it. They're better at it anyway.
Okay, my last question for you will be, you know, how can people support the work of Bush Radio?
So they can give Bush Radio money. And that's like the bluntest I could possibly be about anything. You go to bushradio.co.za, bushradio.co.za, donate as much as you possibly can. Because when I say resources, that is exactly the kind of thing that we need, that kind of input. At the moment, there aren't enough headphones in the studio so that all the children that are part of my crew can actually wear headphones in the studio. It's a basic radio, like, it's basic radio equipment. Like, it blows my mind that Bush Radio is struggling when it is doing the work of, sure, like, five organizations. So for me, number one would be, we need the resources, bushradio.co.za. There's a donate link, use it. The other ways you can support Bush Radio is be part of it. So collaborations, let's talk about how we can tell your story and you can tell our story, and we can talk about how we are the same, how we are, all the things that we share in common, you know? Like, there's so many differences in the world, and it's something that gets highlighted over and over again, like, you're different from me and he's different from, and they are different in this way, but we have so much more in common because we're humans. And so telling our stories to each other, like, in this way, and talking about, like, our challenges, we could possibly work out some solutions. I fully believe that would be a win. Let's talk about how we are the same, and then I could learn something from what you guys do, and you could learn something from what I do. And that's the way we'll advance in the world. I don't have a number three. Maybe just donate again. Number one is donate. Number two is collaborate. And number three is donate. Yes.
And Juanita, before we go, if people want to find anything about, where can people listen to Crew? Where can people find All Africa Global Media? Where can people find all the things? You're involved in another organization, Quote This Woman. Where can people find anything that you're involved in?
So, yeah, so it's bushradio.co.za. And then there's little offshoots. There's a blog. There's, you know, the news bulletins. You can also listen to Bush Radio Live by streaming. I work at All Africa Global Media. The website is allafrica.com. And you'll see the results of me and my team's labor, my team and I's labor on the stories. And also with Quote This Woman, if you just do a Quote This Woman Google search, you'll find the website is to make sure that women's voices are heard. And it's not just women, it's everyone that's marginalized. So it's Quote This Woman Plus. Plus is all the non-binary people in the world who don't necessarily fit under, you know, one description, one box. Make sure that their voices are heard in the media. And for now, definitely South Africa, in the South African media, but hopefully on the African continent, slowly getting more and more involvement there as well.
Well, on that note, Juanita, yeah, we thank you very much for coming on our show today.
It was good. I hope that it wasn't too much, because now I'm like, oh, I tend to go a bit deep, which is just my nature. I'm sure Kusi warned you. Did you warn them, Kusi?
No, there was nothing to warn about, Kusi.
No, nothing.
Nothing to warn us about. No, this was great. So thank you very much for coming on. And we thank all of you for listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us do not understand what we are facing or how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health.
If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh.